This is Indiana Public Radio News. Good morning. I'm Stan Sollers at 44 past the hour. The COVID-19 bug out for home was nearly 2 years ago. Infection numbers and deaths are still a factor of life in Indiana, but figures are dropping. What, if anything, does this mean for Ball State? Returning this week for another Ball State update is the university's president, Jeff Murrins. President Murrins, welcome back.
It's good to be with you, Stan. Good morning.
Good morning. Good to have you here. Well, what are the latest Ball State COVID numbers, infection numbers and vaccination numbers for faculty, students, professional staff and service staff?
With respect to vaccinations, in terms of students who are taking one or more courses on campus, across all students, more than 75% are fully vaccinated. And I think it's more than 80% who in our residence hall who are vaccinated. In terms of full-time employees, with respect to faculty and professional staff, it's approximately 90% are fully vaccinated. With respect to administrative staff, that number is about 80%. Unfortunately, our service staff continues to lag. It's only about 50%. On the infection side, there's really good news. Our number of infections peaked during the third week of January, and those numbers have dropped significantly now. We're in the fourth week of it dropping significantly. And so in terms of our campus population, only 8 students are presently presumed active, and only 1 employee is presently presumed active with the virus.
Well, should Ball State keep allowing unmasked dining in the school's dining areas as opposed to carryout service and dining in isolated areas? Because, again, the virus is still out there.
It is out there. But a clarification, Stan, our current protocols require masks to be worn inside all buildings with limited exceptions. So one exception is a person does not need to wear a mask, of course, when they're actively eating or drinking. So that's what you're seeing in the dining halls. And I suspect, I suspect some people may be taking advantage of that exception to sit in a dining area unmasked, but not while they're actively eating or drinking. But, to be practical, we're not going to ask our staff to go and police that activity that might produce some unpleasant responses. As we have throughout the pandemic, we continue to rely on the good faith of our students and our employees. As you know, we have enduring values, one of which is social responsibility. And so I'm encouraged that the vast majority of people are mindful of how their actions can impact other people.
Well, beginning today, speaking of masks, Purdue University will go mask optional in several indoor settings on its West Lafayette campus. The change does not apply to particular venues like research and instructional areas. Sports venues will apparently go mask optional. It appeared that they were anyhow. Will Ball State follow the same path soon?
Well, we're going to continue to do two things. We're going to follow the data on our campus, and we're going to continue to be informed by CDC guidance and local health, public health guidance. I've read in the news and heard on your broadcast that the CDC might be coming out with new guidance regarding masks. So rather than simply follow Purdue's approach, we're going to wait and see what the CDC has to say.
Shifting gears here just a bit, with one of the nation's largest teachers' colleges here at Ball State, what's your reaction to efforts at the Indiana State House to let parents and others control, to a degree, lessons in public school classrooms, especially those lessons related to the history of minorities in the LGBTQ communities?
Yeah, like you, I've been following those debates. A couple of thoughts. One is, this has become a potentially polarizing debate, not just one where people are invested in it, but where it's become somewhat polarizing. So my hope is that all of us, irrespective of your view on the issue, can take the temperature down a little bit and find common ground, right? This really is a debate about what's in the best interests of our students and our children. The second thing I would say is, parents should have input. I'm the parent. I'm a parent of 5 children. I think it's reasonable for any parent to be invested and informed about their child's education. We want parents to be engaged with their children's education. But related to that, the curriculum, though, also needs to be guided by subject matter experts, the teachers, informed by parent input, but also informed and guided by the experts, our teachers.
And what would be your reaction to state legislators being in favor of not allowing transgender girls to participate in girls' sports? Indeed, some legislators have come out for this bill that's been circulating.
Yeah, and so that's another one where I hope that both sides of the debate can maybe listen to the perspectives and inputs of the other and avoid, you know, politicizing an important issue. So on the one hand, you know, as a former athlete, middle school, high school, college, you know, there's great values in participating in sports and creating a sense of belonging and the important and teaching our young people about the importance of teamwork. But sports are also a competitive activity in high school and even more so in college and the Olympics and beyond. So I also do appreciate the need to develop rules that ensure fair competition for all participants. And what I've learned as now participating at the NCAA level and the NCAA Board of Governors and the NCAA Division I Board of Directors is that we need to listen to the medical experts when determining that critical issue of what would be fair for all participants. And the physiology, the biology of this continues to evolve. It's complex and continues to evolve. And so it's important that whatever protocols or rules that we set in place be informed by medical evidence, medical experts.
Running out of time here, have time for one more question and shifting gears over to Ball State's financial picture at this time in the pandemic. How does the university's wallet look right now?
Our current operating budget for this fiscal year, which runs through June 30th, is stable. I anticipate that we'll end the year with a modest but positive operating margin. And again, as you've heard me say, I feel quite fortunate that our long-term financial position, the university's long-term financial position, is very strong. Certainly, there are challenges around enrollment and other pressures, but I feel that we're very well prepared to meet those challenges.
Well, President Jeff Mearns, thanks again for coming back this week. Good to have you on the air again.
It's very good to be with you, Stan. Please take good care.
You as well. For IPR News, I'm Stan Sollers.